Welcome to the Bad Boss Brief. I am Stephanie Pairolo.
I'm Eugene S. Robinson.
And today, episode 33, we're going to be talking about bodies.
Which makes me think of the Sex Pistols song, Bodies, but that's just because I'm an old punk rocker. So.
Well, it's can you talk about your own body, other people's bodies? What are the rules in the workplace and how have they shifted? And when I was thinking about this episode, I was remembering way, way long time ago when I was a young person, and there was a cultural understanding all of a sudden that you couldn't ask a woman when her baby was due because sometimes she wasn't pregnant. But I remember, and anyone that's under 40 is like rolling their eyes and thinking, WTF right now. But the reality is there was that cultural moment, right? There was that thing of like, oh, not every woman that is carrying weight in her belly is going to be giving birth. So let's just not have that conversation. But that really was a moment. And I feel like that moment has continued, right? Like for a long time, it was okay to comment on somebody losing weight. Right? You might say, particularly one woman to another, might say something like, you look great. Have you been working out? Right? That used to be okay for a long time. Now, particularly in my neck of the woods in the liberal Pacific Northwest, no one talks about anybody's body at all. There's been a real evolution, even to the point where I feel like you don't hear the compliments that you might have heard. Cute haircut. Love your jacket. Are those new shoes? Unless it's two people who are good friends with each other. Have you seen the same sort of evolution?
Sort of. I mean, but you have to understand, given our ages, I mean, we kind of came of age in the dark ages. And by which I mean, I remember walking into a store when back in the days when everybody had to wear a suit to work, walking into a store in order to buy a shirt. And the guy said, can I help you? I go, I'm looking for a shirt. He goes, something to go with your tan. And I go, You know, some people nowadays would call it a microaggression. I looked on it as an opportunity to run him up and down the ladder, getting different shirts that, of course, I had no intention of buying, you know, because I needed something to go with my tan. So, you know, these were, after about 30 like shirt changes, he realized I was not going to buy anything and our pas de deux ended. So I think, but generally in the workplace, you kept it. The rule has always been, and keep in mind, I started at a military publication, a defense publication, to keep it simple, stupid. it's about the job at hand. The military was just at that point embracing or getting close to embracing, or at least accepting the reality that women would be in your workspace. So outside of line steppers who would do things like show up at people's apartments to find out if they were really sick, it was pretty straight arrowed with the military guys. There was not a lot of, oh, that's a nice frock, Mrs. Cleaver. There was none of that. However, when things did go bad back then, and I'm talking about the 80s, like with the tan comment, they went really bad. So I did feel it start to change probably around, I would say, when I was at Mac Life magazine. It could have been the clientele. It could have been the location in South San Francisco. It could have been that a lot of the people who executive staff level were British. I don't know what the X factors were here, but I knew that not only do you not comment about the pregnancy issue, if somebody was indeed pregnant, there was no touching, you know, because there's this whole kind of weirdness happening. Right. Touching the bellies for luck, you know, you just keep it moving. And I remember having a management training class somewhere around then where they actually had that called out as a segment, which is like, you know, just keep it focused on the job. Now, how about that as a marching order? So,
but I think what's interesting is that I think we run a risk, especially after having spent years where a lot of us are working, looking at our coworkers in little squares and rarely seeing them in person. I think as leaders, we still need to remember that people are in bodies and they are in families and partnerships with other people who are in bodies, right? So, and I think we need to keep this in mind for a couple of reasons. One is we're still human beings,
Right.
We are still going to react to people as physical beings, right? So like one of the challenges that's come up, and this is, I have had executive coaching clients and executives bring this up to me for a number of years, which is when we see someone who has a radically altered physical appearance, we get curious about it, right? Why has he lost 20 pounds in a short period of time? Is he ill? Why does she suddenly have no hair? Is this a hairstyle choice, or does she have, is she getting chemo? Right. And these are legitimate, real concerns. And so I've had people say to me, what if I'm concerned about someone's health? Can I, am I allowed to, I can't say you look tired, but what do I say? And so I think that that's what I really wanted to explore in today's episode is the idea of like, we know we need to not talk about bodies. But we also don't want to forget that we are beings in bodies.
Right. You know, it was funny. You spoke about me being acted upon versus being an actor. And I remember when I wised up to that, it must have been 82, when there were not a lot of people who shaved their heads in 82. And I assumed, having gone to a party, that I was talking to someone who, like me, had made a stylistic fashion choice to shave their head, and because they were driven by interest in punk rock music or hardcore music. And so I said, oh, you know, I kind of said, ah, hey, we got this same hairstyle. And the guy goes, well, I imagine we got it for different reasons, which couldn't mean anything back then. I still didn't see it and trundled headlong into, well, what's your reason? And the guy goes, well, I'm going through chemo. I was like, and that was a point at which I realized it was a minefield and one should assume nothing, right?
But I think also like what I have, you know, suggested to clients and friends who are in that situation is, you know, you can ask skillfully. Yeah. If someone shows up at a meeting and they look haggard, don't say you look tired. Say, how are you?
Mm-hmm.
Open-ended question. You know, is there anything that you need help with?
Yeah.
Right. I think it's still okay to acknowledge that you see the other person. And I think one of the ways that I see this a lot is I'm now in circumstances where clients or people that I've seen mostly on, you know, a video screen, I am now meeting in person.
Mm.
And there is always the exact same response, which is they notice how tall, people notice how tall they are, right? And I hear this because I am tall. And even clients who knew me before the pandemic,
right,
who know how tall I am. Like I met with a former client for coffee a couple of weeks ago, and she was like, I always forget how tall you are. And I think it's to me, I mean, we're friendly. Like I didn't take that in any sort of weird way. I am a tall person, but it's an acknowledgement that there is a dynamic, there's an element, there's a dimension when we are sitting across the table from one another that counts. It is substantive. And I think that I don't want us to lose that, right? I don't want us to forget that, you know, I'm all about not having to force people to return to the office, but also let's acknowledge that there is something that happens when people are sitting face to face.
I mean, and I wonder if you can also smell out when people are being find it to a certain degree off-putting when people are being too careful. I mean, 90% of the time, if I'm asked, how's it going? I will say fine, even when it's not fine, right? But I appreciate the avoidance of assumption. So I guess that I would sign on to that. So,
well, one of the things that I've always wondered is, do you talk about your own body? So when I was coming up and a young woman, I would never talk about my own body, right? Like that Ani DeFranco song, nobody got enough sleep, nobody likes their job, right? I wouldn't say I was tired. I was a single mom with two little kids. I would never reference that I had children, never reference that I menstruated. I was very assiduous about never talking about being sick, being tired, having cramps. And I felt like that was a way for me to protect myself as a woman, as a single mother, you know, from assumptions or ideas. But now I wonder, like, I don't think that's still valid. I mean, I've had conversations with women at work about free bleeding and how like there should be no use of menstrual products. And I'm like, I love that I'm having this conversation in a tech company right now, but yeah. I don't know, where do you fall on that?
Well, it's weird. It's, I'll tell you, I miss the days of bifurcation. And I don't like what Google has done to our professional reality. I used to be able to go to work and people would say to me, what did you do this weekend? And I would say, truthfully, gardening. But that was not the sum total of what I had done this weekend. I remember walking down the hallway at Ziff Davis. I was an associate editor at Corporate Computing Magazine. And somebody stopped me in the hallway with a newspaper in their hand. And they go, oh, I just read this article about you. And there's a picture of me in the article. And I look at the person, I look at the article, and I say, oh, people always confuse us. The guy kind of looks at me, and I'm wearing the same shirt at work that I'm wearing in the photograph to the piece, but he understood what I was doing and what I was saying, which is that has no bearing on this. These, my personal reality and my professional reality, they're not going to give me a raise because I sing for a band. They're not going to do that. In fact, it will interfere in them being able to understand what I'm contributing here professionally. So it was a systematic denial of the reality of experience. I was Clark Kent, always at work, never Superman. And it got harder and harder to sell that, ultimately culminating with me almost losing the job of editor-in-chief at EQ before I had the job because of videos of us playing live. And then finally, somebody clear-headed said, it's a music magazine. He's a musician. This makes sense. Leave him alone. That had to be said before I could get the job. So I've been on tenterhooks about talking about my body, my placement in space for about, you could mark it very closely to the ascendancy of Google.
Well, and that also opens up the idea that there's a lot of people who are getting in trouble for being on OnlyFans. I mean, for people who are not familiar with Eugene's work, he often performs scantily clad.
Right.
With duct tape over the ears, which is a particular look.
Keep the earplugs in.
Exactly. But so that's, and I think what's interesting is that, you know, you hear a lot of stories about a teacher or professional who, you know, or a nurse, a doctor, or someone who is making enough money to do their job, for which they are underpaid, especially teachers, by, you know, getting in front of a camera, also scantily clad, and all of the moral judgments around that, right? Which is that's another aspect of talking about bodies. Right. What if, you know, what are the assumptions, right? You're talking about it in a situation where you are on a stage, you're a musician, you know, you have a particular persona when you're on a stage. But, you know, there are also people who, I have a young friend who does burlesque dancing. Mm-hmm. She also has a regular job. She is a professional dancer. She's amazingly good at what it is that she does. But I've watched her and thought to myself in my, you know, older generation brain, is this going to hurt her?
Yeah.
Right? Is this going to damage her? But then why should it? She is a professionally trained dancer who mm-hmm. gets paid very well and has a very, you know, interested following. And mm-hmm. she is also scantily clad on a stage. Is it different because she's a woman? Is it different because she's doing something that's kind of more understandably sexualized than what it is that you're doing? I don't know.
I have to go with the Japanese kind of maxim about the nail that sticks up needs to get hammered down. And I think that until there's a more even distribution in terms of power structure, I think anything that makes you, and like, I'll give you an example. There are a couple of famous celebrities whose stock in trade is some sort of male machismo. These are male celebrities. The stock in trade is male machismo. And a couple of these guys are male oriented. They sleep with men. They enjoy, whether they're bisexual or homosexual, it doesn't make a difference. And they conceal us from the public. And they conceal it from the public because they feel it would affect their box office appeal or record appeal. People would purchase fewer of their records. And I try to make this point in my memoir that I don't really care who the people, I don't really care about the art I like being produced. I don't care about the sex lives of the people who produce the art that I like. I just don't care. Obviously, it is something that people look at Rupert Everett, who was, a big heartthrob at the time, Two Weddings and a Funeral, came out. Not only was he a homosexual, but had actually worked as a prostitute or escort for a period of time. And they also point to the fact that his career has been adversely affected by this kind of revelation, because it suddenly became difficult for them to buy him as a male lead, a character, character lead. So I think that until you have an even distribution of people in the power structure, that he could have healthily and truthfully said, anything that interferes with them understanding me specifically as a talented actor is not going to help me professionally. So the burlesque dancer, that's not going to help you professionally. It would be great if it did, or if it didn't, or it didn't interfere at the very least. But we know there are no other executive staffers who are doing that. So she becomes an outlier. And fortunately, in the case of Mac Life magazine, the publisher, the group publisher, was a fan of the band in a weird, weird twist. So it worked out for me. But in general, it's made it very difficult to be a nail that sticks up. So, and which breeds, so people have talked about this in terms of politicians, which breeds a certain type of employee class that that has very much to do with one of the sub rosas we're going to talk about later, the nail that sticks up. It's a weird place to be, because the nail that sticks up doesn't have to always be a problematical case. It could be somebody who's super talented and making everybody else look bad because they're less talented. So what do you do about presentation, personal appearance? And I mean, do you address it? Do we talk? I think the goal, my professional goal for the last 20 years has been to keep it simple. Just I'm gardening. If people find stuff online, that's my hobby, my side project, to try to minimize anything that would indicate that the nail is higher.
Well, but then it also comes into the situation of like people who try to hide the appearance of their body to avoid discrimination. Mm-hmm. Right. So there are people that I know, men and women, on LinkedIn who have their picture is over 5 years old. They don't look like that in person anymore. But I'm not judging them, because there is a stigma about older workers. Right. And I have known, a lot of different ways in which people will manage how they appear in the world. And, if you're not on a stage, you might not have you have a common name. It might be harder to sort of find that. And so I think the idea of sort of trying to mediate how you appear to the world, if you can, sometimes makes a lot of sense.
Yes. It's exhausting, but it makes a lot of sense. Right.
So I would imagine when I was thinking about this, there was a part of me that was like kind of patting myself on the back. And I think for a lot of people that are taking the time to listen to you and I, they already know the, like, we don't talk about bodies, right? They understand that. They understand the nuances. They are very intentional about how they show up. I think where the challenges, and what I would invite us all to look at, are what are the prejudices or stereotypes that we carry around bodies?
Let me just jump in a second. And I start to think about management, employee, executive. And I've been in weird situations where the employee has requested that I note something. They have requested that I step over a line. And I'll give you a prime example. One of my writers says, I have to be out a couple of days next week. I say, fine, are your projects taken care of? Are they covered? She says, yes. And I say, by way of parting, I hope it all works out. We'll see you on Tuesday. And then, which was enough of an opening for her to say, it's funny, this back surgery I'm getting, I didn't know it was back surgery, I didn't ask. I said, this back surgery I'm getting, yeah, has an unintended consequence. And I go, yeah, of making my breasts appear larger. And I got that what she was doing was having breast augmentation surgery over the weekend. And she was trying to tell me in a clever way. I didn't need any of that information. And I just said, good luck. I didn't, you know, naturally, if I tell you I'm going to get surgery on my arm, you might look at my arm or look at my hand. I kept it to the eyes. I'm like, good luck with that. Take care of yourself. Let me know if you need anything. And please exit the office. Right? I went back to work, up to and including a boss who had had the same surgery. And she said, come into my office. Can you feel? And puts my hands on her breast. So these are situations which I understand are probably unusual. But I strange things happen all the time. And they happen around the bodies that we inhabit. And I think, again, I think the best marching order is just to, that's not get the, no, no, but, siempre en derecho.
But I think it's still interesting. What are the narratives that we have, right? Because you have a narrative. Most of us have a narrative about a woman who gets breast augmentation surgery, right? But what if, you know, telling your employer or a supervisor or someone that you're close to at work that you are about to have surgery, because that is surgery and it can be a pretty significant surgery for some people. That is useful information. You are a person in a body who is going to have surgery and you may be in pain. You may need to take time off. What is the narrative that we have? I mean, look at, and that's what I mean. Like, I think we need to examine the narratives that we as workers, we as leaders carry around bodies. Let's use the example of surgery. Is there a different narrative around a woman that chooses to get breast augmentation and talk about that than someone who is in a gender transition who has top surgery?
Right.
Is that different? There are going to be people who have a very different narrative around someone who is in a transition from female to male than someone who is perhaps a woman who's having breast reduction surgery because she's a runner and she, you know, is getting chafe marks from having larger breasts. And I think this is where it's important for individuals to do their own work, because there are a lot of narratives that all of us carry, right? And I was thinking about this notion of, you know, to say, for me to say as a white person, I'm not racist. Oh, just no. Right. I need to acknowledge the ways in which I am influenced by living in a culture of white supremacy. We also have a lot of prejudice around bodies that a lot of times we don't acknowledge. Like, no, I don't think that way. But if we look not just at race, we look at gender identity. We can look at size. Right. Like, having prejudice against fat people is one of the few culturally accepted areas, right? Like I have a friend who identifies as fat and she, every doctor that she goes to says she needs bariatric surgery and wants to give her a pamphlet about calories.
Even if she goes in for a toothache.
She goes in for a toothache. She goes in for a rash. She goes in because she needs stitches. Now they don't ask her about her yoga practice. She obviously knows a lot about, you know, diet and exercise. There's no questions. There's an assumption about who she is and what she needs because of the body that she moves through the world in. It's the same thing with older people. You know, I remember when I was younger, and I remember this now with, you know, acute discomfort. I was working with a woman who was then probably about my age now. And she had a body odor issue. And I remember meeting with her in the morning, and she had, her hair was still wet from the shower. We were on a business trip together. And she still had the body odor issue. And I remember, instead of thinking to myself, wow, that's unfortunate, poor thing, she's obviously well-groomed, she has a body odor issue, that's what's happening with her body, I assumed it's because she was old. I literally thought to myself, like, oh my God, is this what happens to women when they go through menopause? Do they become smelly? Note to those listening, no, we don't. But I had that prejudice, and I think it's really important.
How did you deal with this in actual fact?
I didn't say anything because it was obviously something she was aware of.
How could you tell she was aware of it?
I could tell because she was meticulous about grooming. I mean, this was a woman who, you know, like, was careful about, she used deodorant. She was always well-dressed. She would shower or change whenever she could. And it's one of those things where it's like some people have that issue. right? Just like some people have halitosis and they have gone to the dentist, they've done what they can, and, you know. And I do think that it is important for us to understand that we are going to be in spaces with people whose bodies are challenging to us, right? Like whether it's because, like I remember once having a client who had a really bad stutter. And it was challenging to me to like wait for him to find the word. And I felt terrible about it. Right. Because I'm like, he can't help that he has a stutter. Right. And I had to really, because I'm such a fast talker and I have such a tendency to talk over people that I had to really school myself. Like, you need to sit and wait. But I do think it's important for us to understand what is difficult for us. For me, it was the stutter. For me, it was the woman with the body odor. What's not difficult for me? I am really comfortable for people with accents because my people in my family have accents. Right. I am also really comfortable dealing with people who are disabled, right? Like when my son was in a wheelchair, you could tell right away because most people wouldn't even look at him. They would like look above him, but people who were comfortable with people in wheelchairs would come up and hold out their hand to shake his hand and greet him. Right. And I think it's important for us to stop and do an inventory and be honest with ourselves. What bodies make me uncomfortable? What narratives do I carry around certain kinds of bodies? And what am I okay with so that we can be realistic about where we need to improve?
Yeah. There's a guy I know who's an executive and he works at a large corporation and, you know, everybody goes to the lunchroom together. It's very, I mean, with thousands of people, but he's seen this guy, who doesn't work for him, you know, works in the company and he's figured out what the guy's level is. They have different rankings for different levels and he's developed an insanely illogical, recognized by him as illogical, hatred for this guy on the basis of how the man walks. He says, no, just sotto voce between us. He's like, I can tell everything about somebody based on how they walk. And I can tell you, this guy is a slacker. He's a terrible employee. And I was like, thank God he doesn't work for you. It's his walk. He was like, yeah, I know, but I can't get this idea out of my head. And I go, can you imitate the walk for me? And he goes, yeah, I can. And so he shows me, gives me about 10 paces. And it's a kind of the guy has kind of a saunter, apparently. And this just drives him crazy. And I have no doubt at all, were that guy to actually work for him, it would be an unsuccessful pairing purely on the basis of a pre-existing bias on something like his walk. These guys are culturally the same. They're both Anglos. They're both about the same height and about the same weight. But animal brain starts working and he can't get it out of his head, does not like this guy.
But if someone came to me in executive coaching and talked to me about that, I would actually see that as a positive step because he at least understands. He understands that what he is experiencing is irrational. He understands and identifies the narratives that he has. He thinks this guy's a slacker because of how he walks. Mm-hmm. And he at least has the understanding to recognize it's something he says to you quietly as a friend. It's not something that he's going to broadcast, right? And I think that's the important thing, right? For people who are listening to this, who might be thinking about areas where they carry narratives or negative ideas around people's bodies, we all do. Newsflash, we all do. We are human beings. There are people we are attracted to. There are people we have aversion to. The idea is understanding what is the narrative? What is my prejudice? How can I be more skillful, if not in eradicating it, at least in masking it effectively so that it doesn't impact? Because I will tell you, all of the people that are now young and fit or slim or conventionally attractive, time will change your body.
Speak for yourself. joke. It's a joke. Just kidding.
But it is, but it's true. And I think it is, you know, it is important to recognize that, you know, if you stay alive long enough to get old, your body will change. Your physical capacity will change. The way you appear in the world will change. It will continue to evolve. So right now, start practicing the compassion, for other people whose bodies may not conform to very rigid, strict norms. Because even if you're in within those rigid, strict norms right now, there may come a time where you will no longer be. Okay. Yep. I think that's all we've got. If you have a suggestion for a show that you would like us to do, or if you have any questions for our advice podcast, Sub Rosa, WTF@badbossbrief.com. That's WTF@badbossbrief.com. I read every single email that comes in and often will respond with just some free advice because I can. So look forward to hearing from you and see you again in a couple of weeks. Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Bad Boss Brief podcast with your hosts, Eugene S. Robinson and Stephanie Payrolo. You can check out more of their work by visiting consigliera.substack.com for Stephanie and eugenesrobinson.substack.com for Eugene. You can also find Eugene at Mr. Sleep 3, that's number 3, on Instagram. Reach out with your questions, concerns, workplace situations, or suggestions to us at WTF@badbossbrief.com. We'll personally answer every submission. Be sure to join us at badbossbrief.substack.com every other Wednesday for episodes of Bad Boss Brief and every single week for our Sub Rosa shorts so you can gain further insights into your workplace environments. Until next time, don't be an asshole.